what was so incredibly powerful about the tabloids in the UK and all of Murdoch's properties is that politicians sort of thought, well, they've been through my trash. They know my secrets. And if I run afoul of them, then my life could be ruined by whatever secret that I have lurking in my past, whatever bit of bribery I've done or whatever sort of untoward thing I've done, they're going to expose me. And it keeps people very much in line.
ברוכים הבאים למרקרים, פודקאסט סוף השבוע של דה מרקר. ההזדמנות שלכם לקחת פסק זמן ממחזור החדשות היומיומי ולצלול איתנו לאירועים, לאנשים ובעיקר לרעיונות מאחורי החדשות. כאן באולפן איתכם גיא רולניק והמגיש האורח שלי היום תומר אביטל. שמענו בפתיח את שרה אליסון, תחקירנית מהוושינגטון פוסט ואחת מהכוכבות של סדרת הטלוויזיה המרדוקים. שלום תומר.
מה המצב?
בסדר, תומר, מה אתה עושה כאן?
למה אתה מתכוון?
אני אגיד לך בדיוק למה אני מתכוון. אני אדליף למאזינים, אני מקווה שזה בסדר איתך, שרעייתך, אשת חיקך הנצחית, אמורה לכרוע ללדת תוך שעות או ימים, ואתה אמור להיות בהיקון. איך הגעת לאולפן?
זהו, מינוס, אנחנו כבר עברנו את היום, את הדיו דייט. שמע, הזמנת אותי, היא מתה עליך, נתנה לי אור ירוק, ואני פה בדקת קריאה עם הטלפון. איכילוב לא רחוק מהמערכת.
בסדר, צריך לוודא שיש פה קליטה באולפן. טוב, תומר, בוא תספר למאזינים עליך, אני מתכוון לאלה מהמאזינים שלא הצביעו לך בפריימריז האחרונים של מפלגת העבודה.
זהו, אני יותר עיתונאי מפוליטיקאי, זה היה אפיזודה, אני לא יודע אם תחזור על זה, אפיזודה קצרה, אני מגיל 21 הייתי כתב בכלי התקשורת המסורתיים, בידיעות אחרונות, בעובדה, בקשת, והחלטתי לפני, לא יודע כבר כמה, 6 שנים, ללכת לדרך עצמאית. אז היה כזה מהלך אחרון של עזאזל, נמאס לי מלעבוד תחת טייקונים שאומרים במה להתעסק במה לא, אני אנסה משהו חדש. ביקשתי מהציבור דרך אדסטארט כסף לעשות עיתונות עצמאית לא תלויה, לעקוב אחרי ח"כים לא שקופים, לפתור את הבעיות בדמוקרטיה באמצעות עיתונות עצמאית נשכנית. ווואלה, אני לא משוגע היחיד, מסתבר שיש עוד כמה אלפים שתרמו ותורמים עד היום, נתנו לי רוח גבית להקים מיזם שנקרא מים של שקיפות, שהפך בהמשך לשקוף. אותו הקמתי עם ניר בן צבי ועידן בנימין, ושהיום כבר מתרחב, ואולי ראית, אני כבר לא שמע, מתאחדים עכשיו עם, אחרי הייחוד עם העין השביעית, מתאחדים עכשיו עם המקום הכי חם בגנום. אז אני פשוט ניסיתי לקדם שינוי בדרך שבו מסקרים את השלטון, וגם שינוי בתקשורת, להראות שאפשר מודל אחר, מודל שבו לא מסתמך על קליקים ועל מפרסמים, אלא מודל שמביא לציבור את מה שחשוב, לא מה שיביא רייטינג, מה שצריכים לדעת, ולנסות לתקן את מה שדורש תיקון.
כן, אז החבר'ה של שקוף והעין השביעית והמקום הכי חם היו כאן באולפן הזה, בפודקאסט הזה, בשנתיים האחרונות. שלושת גופי התקשורת העצמאיים האלה התמזגו לפני חודש, עכשיו נמצאים בקמפיין גיוס המונים גדול, וכמו שהמאזינים של הפודקאסט הזה יודעים, אני מאוד מאמין בעיתונות עצמאית שממומנת על ידי הציבור הרחב, אז אם עדיין לא תרמתם והצטרפתם, תעשו גוגל, תחפשו על זה ותראו שהם עושים עבודה מדהימה.
אני חושב שתסכים איתי שבימים האלה שאת רואה מה קורה בכנסת, שאיזה חוקי, שמה מעניין את הנבחרים שלנו, הכי הכי חשוב זה לחזק את הגופים שמסקרים את השלטון בצורה עצמאית.
ואחד הדברים היוצאי דופן שהעיתונות העצמאית עושה, ורוב העיתונות לא עושה, זה לסקר את הבוסים של העיתונים הגדולים ושל הערוצים הגדולים. אף העיתונאים לא רוצים לגעת בזה, כי בישראל יש 5 טייקונים ששולטים בכל העיתונות, וזה בעצם הסיבה שאני הזמנתי אותך היום לפודקאסט הזה, בגלל שנושא הפודקאסט שלנו הוא עיתונות, ואנחנו נראיין היום עיתונאית חוקרת, הרבה מאוד שנים, ותיקה מאוד, בחירה מאוד, שפועלת בארצות הברית, שהיא אחד הכוכבים של סדרת טלוויזיה מדהימה שעלתה לפני כמה שבועות ב-CNN וב-HBO, CNN ו-HBO שייכים לאותה חברה, והיא עוסקת באיש שהכינוי שלו בעולם הוא The Man Who Owns the News, זה המול, הבעלים של ערוצי התקשורת והעיתונים הכי חזק בעולם, הכוונה היא כמובן לרופרט מרדוק, לסדרה קוראים המרדוקס. וחשבתי לעצמי, אוקיי, אז מי יהיה המראיין האורח? ואמרתי, האיש המתאים לזה הוא תומר אביטל, בגלל שתומר מאוד מתעניין בשאלה של תפקוד העיתונות, ואיך העיתונות הרבה פעמים משתפת פעולה עם הגורמים הכי שליליים בחברה נגד הציבור. וחוץ מזה, תומר, חודשים, ובשנים האחרונות אני רואה אצלך בכתיבה שלך, ובעיקר בציוצים שלך בטוויטר, שהכוח העצום שיש לברוני התקשורת הישראלים מטריד אותך. אתה בעברך עבדת אצל נוני מוזס לפני הרבה שנים, וכתבת וביקרת אותו בצורה חריפה, את סוג העיתונות שלו, אבל בשנים האחרונות אתה גם מבקר את קשת, את ערוץ התקשורת, ערוץ הטלוויזיה מספר אחת בישראל. אז השאלה שלי אליך, לפני שנפנה למרואיינת שלנו, הוא מי הוא רופרט מרדוק הישראלי?
וואו, יש כמה, אני חושב, נכון? פעם זה הנוני מוזס, הביג פוט של התקשורת הישראלית, שאף אחד לא... עד היום מעטים האנשים שישבו איתו, בחוץ בשנים האחרונות, ויודעים איך הוא בעצם מנהל מאחורי הכלים ומושך בחוטים. יש לך את משפחת ורטיים בקשת 12, שמעטים בציבור, עזוב, מכירים אותם, יודעים שהם במקביל הבעלים של קוקה קולה, תאגיד מהגדולים בעולם שגורם למחלות, שגורם לתבדל. לא מעט ישראלים חולים בסקרת יותר מחצי מיליון, שזה מחלה שנגרמת בעקבות שתייה מתוקה ובין היתר, הם לא מחזיקים רק בקוקה קולה, הם מחזיקים בטרה, בנביעות, בפריגת ועוד.
שכחת את בנק המזרחי.
ובנקים גם, זה עוולה אחרת, וערוץ 13 שהוא מוחזק על ידי אילן בלווטניק, שמחזיק במקביל את איזה מפעל, גיא?
נשר.
נשר, מפעל הפרטי המזהם ביותר בישראל, ומשפחת שטראוס, שגם מייצרת אינסוף מוצרים עתירי סוכר ומלח. ואני רוצה להגיד לך משהו, אמרת שאני מבקר את התקשורת, אתה יודע, עד לפני שנה, שנתיים, בעיקר ביקרתי את הסיקור שלה, את איך היא מסקרת דברים, מה היא מעוותת ולמה. עכשיו אני מבין, אני חושב שעליתי עוד קומה מאז של מה הם לא מסקרים, מה הם דואגים שלא יהיה בדיון הציבורי, ופה זה מתחבר לי לנושא הבריאותי, שהתחיל ממש לעניין אותי, סביב הדיונים של מס סוכר, זוכרת המס שעוד רגע יבטלו.
בהחלט.
אז זה מטורף, כי אתה מתחיל להבין שלתקשורת, לברוני התקשורת, כמו שאתה קורא להם, אין שום אינטרס בישראל שנדבר על מה שהורג אותנו. יש מסמך מאוד מעניין שאני אמיץ לכולם לקרוא, מסמך שנקרא סיבות מוות מובילות בישראל. מסמך של משרד הבריאות, הוא יוצא כל שנה, ותראה שם שחור על גבי לבן נתונים את הטבלה של מה הדברים שהורגים את הישראלים הכי הרבה. כמו שאתה יכול לדמיין, טרור ותאונות דרכים זה בקצה התחתון. כל העשירייה, כמעט כל העשירייה העליונה, זה מחלות לב, זה מחלות שאפשר למנוע, זה מחלות כמו סוכרת, שנוצרת מאותם מוצרים שאנחנו צורכים, המוצרים שמייצרים בעלי ערוצי התקשורת, שקובעים על מה אנחנו מדברים ועל מה אנחנו לא מדברים. צירוף מקרים, אני לא יודע.
אז ממש, תכף נסביר קצת יותר למאזינים שלא מכירים מספיק את Fox News ואת הסוג העיתונות שעושה רופרט מרדוק בכל העולם, אז Fox עדיין לא, אין קיים בישראל, אין ערוץ כזה שהוא ממש כאילו פרופגנדה ימנית וכוחנית כזאת כמו שיש בפוקס, אבל בשנים האחרונות משהו כן קורה בערוצי הטלוויזיה המרכזיים, וגם יש לנו ערוץ חדש שהופיע לפני כמה שנים, אז בוא תסביר.
ערוץ 14, שייך למשפחת מירילשווילי. אגב, אתה יודע שמחזיקים אותו, אתה יודע איך הם מחזיקים אותו? דרך חברה רשומה במקלט מס, ביה בתולה. סתם פרט מעניין.
כן, אגב, נתניהו שינה להם את החוק, כי בעבר, לפי חוק הרשות השנייה, אסור היה למשקיעים זרים להחזיק שליטה בערוצים ישראלים, וזה שונה לפני 3 שנים, עבור מירילשווילי ובלווטניק.
ערוץ שמתגאה בתוכנית הפטריוטים. אוקיי, ערוץ שמוחזק במקלט מס ובבעלות זרה. אז שמע, הערוץ הזה הוא, לדעתי לגמרי הולך להיות Fox News, הצפייה בו הולכת וגדלה. אני רואה במעגלים שלי אנשים צורכים את החדשות שלהם משם. אני רואה שהקונספירציות מתחילות שם, אנשים פתאום שואלים אותי, תגיד, אתה יודע, אם אני לא רוצה לחזור לזה, אני לא רוצה להפיץ את זה, אתה יודע שליברמן עשה ככה וככה, דברים שהם הזויים לגמרי, זה מחולל קונספירציות, ויש לך שם אנשים כמו אראל סגל, שיושבים ומליטים את הצופים בקונספירציות שאפילו לא ישראליות. ראיתי עכשיו בפייסבוק אותו מדבר על הנטר ביידן, אבל כמה שזה...
כן, הנטר ביידן זה איזה פרשייה שמאוד מעסיקה את הימין האמריקאית. אגב, חלק מהסיפור הוא נכון, אבל הסיפור הוא לא סיפור מרכזי. הימין האמריקאי בטירוף סביב זה, בטוויטר אתה רואה את זה, ואיכשהו הימין הישראלי הביביסטי אימץ אותו, כאילו שזה הוכחה לכל הטעויות של של אלה שמתנגדים לנתניהו.
בדיוק, וזה גם סוג של תראה ציפור, במובן של, יש לנו לא מעט בעיות אמיתיות במדינה, אז אתה נגיד, הזכרתי את הסוכרת, רק השבוע גיליתי שאנחנו מקום, סליחה שאני חוזר על זה, אנחנו מקום, צריך לדבר על זה, מקום ראשון ב-OECD בקריטות גפיים, בעקבות המחלה. מקום ראשון, גיא, איך זה לא היה בשום כלי תקשורת עד אתמול, אחרי שצייצתי את זה, גם כלכליסט פרסמו את זה. אז נגיד, ערוץ 14, הם לא מדברים על דברים שליטרלי הורגים אותנו, הם מדברים על הנטר ביידן, מונולוגים אינסופיים, על הטרללת הליברלית וכל הדברים האלה, וזה אותם שיטות, בדיוק כמו של פוקס ניוז.
כן. אוקיי, אז בוא נפנה עכשיו למרואיינת שלנו, קצת סבר. אז שרה אליסון היא עיתונאית ותיקה בוושינגטון פוסט, לפני זה היא הייתה בוונטי פייר, ולפני זה היא הייתה בוול סטריט ג'ורנל, שהיה שייך רופרט מרדוק, והיא מופיעה כמובן בסדרת הטלוויזיה המרדוקים. אני מאוד ממליץ, היא עדיין לא עלתה ב-HBO בישראל, מי שיש לו גישה ל-HBO בחול, אני ממליץ להסתכל, אם לא, ברגע שזה יגיע לישראל, זה סדרה מדהימה.
אתה יודע מאיפה רוב הישראלים כן מכירים את הסיפור של מרדוק?
ברור.
מהסדרה היורשים, סדרה מרתקת, אתה גם צייצת עליה, אני זוכר, וואו, שלוש שנות רוצו לראות. ואתה יודע, עוד משפט אחד על רופרט מרדוק, ואחרי שראיתי את הסדרה, שאנחנו נראה עכשיו את הכוכבת, אחת הכוכבות שלה, אני הבנתי משהו, גיא, נכון? מרדוק הוא אחד ממחוללי הקונספירציות הגדולים בעולם, פוקס וכל אלה, אם זה הכחשת אקלים ומה לא. אתה רואה את הסדרה הזאת, אומר, בונה, עזבו קונספירציות, יש פה את הקונספירציה הכי גדולה, היא נכונה, כלומר יש בן אדם אחד, עם כוח כמעט, כוח אגדי,
כן,
כמעט
זה לא קונספירציה, זה סיפור אמיתי, זה ההפך מקונספירציה.
אז,
כן.
אז חברים, לפני שאתם הולכים ובודקים עם העולם שטוח, יש פה משהו אמיתי, יש בן אדם שקובע את סדר היום בארצות הברית, בבריטניה, באוסטרליה, בן אדם עם כוח אינסופי.
כן, אבל אתה יודע מה, אם היו כאן ימנים באולפן עכשיו, אם היו אומרים לך, שזה נכון שרופרט מרדוק הוא מאוד חזק, אבל זה כלום לעומת הקבוצה הסודית של בעלי כל העיתונים השמאלנים בעולם שפועלים ביחד בעצה אחת.
אבל איכשהו מרדוק מינה את הנשיא, את טראמפ, נכון? איכשהו...
כן, בהחלט.
כן.
אז בסדר, בואו ניגש ישר לראיון. So Sarah Ellison is a writer at the Washington Post. She covers media and politics. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us this morning from New York.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So Sarah, before we start, many of our listeners did not see yet the Murdoch series on CNN or HBO. In this series, you are one of the star investigative journalists. So by way of introduction, please tell us about your career. How did you become a Murdoch expert? And if you can, please share with us the highs and the lows of reporting on the most powerful media mogul in the world.
Well, I started covering Rupert Murdoch by accident. I was a young reporter at the Wall Street Journal in 2007, and Rupert Murdoch made a bid for the Wall Street Journal. He made an unsolicited takeover offer for the paper, and I was covering the publishing industry, and so I sort of had to cover the story. And then I ended up writing a book about that transaction. And when I wrote that book, I thought, oh, well, I've written a whole book on Rupert Murdoch. Now I don't have to cover him anymore. Ha ha. That was in, 2009 or 2010, and I've been doing it ever since, partly because Murdoch becomes more relevant with every passing year, and we always think he's at the end of his career, and this is, you know, there's one more capstone, and then he's going to be done. But he continues. Highs and lows. Murdoch's lows are the highs for the journalists who cover him, so... Phone hacking was a scandal in Britain that was absolutely a fascinating and terrifying experience because you saw exactly how some of these levers are pulled. And I think we'll talk about this more, but I have been blocked from covering certain things by the company, but I've generally found it to be a very rich vein of coverage and have enjoyed doing it all these years. So, I mean, I've enjoyed it somewhat. I also say that it's a major failure of my life that I'm still writing about Rupert Murdoch, 13 years after I started. So there we go. We can get into this in a psychotherapy session in a bit.
Perhaps it's a major failure of the US and the UK political systems that you still need to cover Rupert Murdoch. And he's still the most powerful media mogul in the world. You know, I once had a long conversation with Alan Rusbridger, the former editor-in-chief of the Guardian newspaper, who exposed the News of the World affair. And one of the questions that I asked him was this testimony of Rebecca Brooks, the editor of the News of the World in the UK Parliament, where she actually acknowledged on camera in the British Parliament that News of the World has been paying, bribing people to Scotland Yard, the most senior police officers. And I asked Alan, how come that this revelation did not become like a national scandal? It was like 15 years ago or so in the UK. How come that all the news is not, all the journalists, investigative journalists and other people and politicians are all over him? And Alan paused for a few seconds and then he said one word, omerta, which is the code of silence in Italian, the mob. And the question is, again, did you feel that at some point in time where Murdoch was so powerful that it was extremely difficult for journalists in the West to expose his misdeeds? You know, this series, we had a couple of movies about Rupert Murdoch in the last few years, but this is, now he's like 93 or so. Maybe some of his power is waning. You know, we've had this tremendous, fantastic series about Roger Ailes, the chief of Fox, but only after he died. Was there an element of fear from Rupert and his close people?
Certainly there is a sense, or there was a sense, particularly when Roger Ailes was alive, that Roger would go after the journalists who wrote critically about Fox News. I would say there is a small difference between the UK and the United States, because there are powerful interests here that can stand up to Murdoch in media. I mean, you can get a job somewhere else. I think I was young enough that I didn't perceive there to be a great threat from covering Rupert and his empire. I think that it's more that these things are hard to get at. They're hard to uncover. The funny thing about Murdoch is that some of what he's doing is right in front of us. It's on the front page. It's on your screen. And what's fascinating about, you know, the billionaire behind it all is that it's harder to get at the way that he pulls those levers. The omerta, I think, exists. There are politicians who really benefit from a relationship with him. Certain journalists do benefit from being on his good side. But I think it's less of a conspiracy of silence than he's just very good at manipulating politicians. And it's hard to get at those relationships. I mean, there are plenty of journalists who want to penetrate that organization, and it's very hard.
You mentioned the conspiracies. Murdoch's media itself is spreading conspiracies. Can you tell us why? What power does it give him?
The fascinating thing about Murdoch is that he's both sort of a leader and a follower of the audience and of the culture. So a conspiracy theory is something that's so tempting for people to believe in, as we have seen in so many different aspects of the culture. And what's good for Murdoch is that he can sort of see which ones are gaining steam and getting some traction, and then he can put all of his eggs in that basket and sort of ride it through the kind of audience gains that he would get and that his publications would get, and what would be incredibly lucrative for his media organization. So I think that, you know, whether it's questioning climate change or questioning the election in the United States, these are things that are stories that have some momentum before Murdoch's publications get a hold of them. And then what they're able to do is really sort of run with a kernel of truth and create something out of it that is not true and that is a conspiracy, but that is nonetheless incredibly captivating for the audience. And the audience is the key to monetizing those messages. And it's what sort of Murdoch has lived on for many years. So I think conspiracy is just a very easy story to keep going.
Right. But it's not necessarily journalism. Does the average American knows who Fox belongs to? Does he know Murdoch and the financial interests behind Fox? People who didn't watch the show.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't think so. I know people, when I was writing my book or when I was talking to average, you know, people who weren't immersed in media, they don't really know that there's one person who is owns newspapers in Australia, owns satellite operations in Europe and beyond, and is also in control of Fox News. Like, that kind of international media ownership is not something that the average American or the average person is really clued into.
Sarah, let's understand better, why do we call Rupert Murdoch the man who owns the news or the most powerful media mogul? The fact that he owns Fox News, the Wall Street Journal, and either way, 20 or 30%, maybe 40% of the British newspaper market and 70% in Australia is not the full explanation to the power of Murdoch. Perhaps a better way to understand his power has to do with what it's called, that Rupert masters the dark arts. I remember like 4 or 5 years ago, there was a big story in Wired magazine about Mark Zuckerberg. This is the beginning of the Facebook scandals. And the journalist reported that Zuckerberg, this is Mark Zuckerberg circa 2018, actually ignores the media because he's so powerful. He thinks that the media, most of the coverage is not relevant. He doesn't really fear the media. Of course, now in 2022, he understands better. And then he said there is only one person in the news media that Zuckerberg really fears. And this is Rupert Murdoch, because Murdoch master the dark arts. And I believe that in the CNN series, it's also mentioned. So can you explain our lay listeners what is dark arts when it comes to a media mogul or a newspaper publisher?
At a very basic level, the dark arts are kind of a blackmail operation, whereby if you are someone who runs afoul of a particular storyline, or you're a politician that stands up in a particular way, or a journalist that goes after a powerful interest, you could be targeted by the media organization. And in this case, we're talking about Rupert Murdoch, but it also exists at the Daily Mail and other tabloids in the UK. What that means is that you can have stories written about you in those tabloids or in any of his outlets that are embarrassing to you. There's also the threat of doing that that is incredibly chilling for politicians. One of the great things, and we saw this very much during the phone hacking crisis, is that even if a story is not written or a clip on cable news is not run, there's the threat that it might be. And that is what was so incredibly powerful about the tabloids in the UK and all of Murdoch's properties, is that politicians sort of thought, well, they've been through my trash, they know my secrets. And if I run afoul of them, then my life could be ruined by whatever secret that I have lurking in my past, whatever bit of bribery I've done or whatever sort of untoward thing I've done, they're going to expose me. And it keeps people very much in line.
There were rules meant to stop Murdoch from amassing so much power. But I saw in the show how he got waivers. So I want to ask, from everything you have learned, is there a system that can prevent the next Murdoch from being created?
No.
No.
It's harder now than it was, you know, 40 years ago or 30 years ago or 20 years ago. Because if you say we need a strong regulatory structure, yes, of course, that helps. But now the digital media world is so many tentacled that stopping someone from amassing this kind of power, I think it's just there's no way for the governments to really take some kind of coordinated effort to do that. And I think that the only argument for why you couldn't have another Murdoch is that you cannot amass quite that much power over traditional media in the same way. But if you look at somebody like Zuckerberg or TikTok, if you have an entity that would decide it wanted to have the kind of influence that Murdoch has, they could absolutely do that. So I think the answer is no, you can't prevent it.
So do you see any hope in the future of this empire?
Just panning back a little bit, I think that if you look at what would society be without Rupert Murdoch? Would you have conspiracy theories? Would you have bigotry, homophobia? Would you have the kind of forces that we see his empire sort of thriving on? And I think you have to say that you would see that. So what Murdoch has helped to do is create the culture that we live in, but now we just live here. I mean, this is not like the American political system is not being manipulated to the extent that it used to. I mean, that you can say, like, back early on when Rupert Murdoch was starting out, was he as influential as he is now? But now this is the country I live in, and people don't need Rupert Murdoch entirely. He just needs to kind of like keep the ball rolling. So I don't see, when you say, do I see hope for no more conspiracy theories? Do I see a brighter horizon?
Can Fox change? Even if Murdoch is gone, will it remain in discourse?
Well, this is a big question because, as you know, he is in his 90s. And the question is, what happens when Rupert Murdoch is gone? What do his children do? And there's some speculation that Jake wants to change Fox News and make it more moderate. But it's a cash cow. It makes so much money for that corporation. And if you changed it, I think it's very easy to argue that it would lose the same kind of audience. And so I don't see any kind of desire to do that on behalf of anybody who actually is going to benefit from that, benefit in the bottom line of that cable operation.
Yeah, the only question is if it's Lachlan, and it seems right now that it is Lachlan who is more like his father. If it's Lachlan, the only question, he probably want to continue this trajectory, and the only question is will he be as effective as he's dead. So, but let's take Sarah a few steps back and explain our listeners, how important is the role of Rupert Murdoch in influencing the political agenda, the public discourse, the values and the norms in the US and maybe also in the UK?
I mean, there's not a single person in media that is more influential. And Rupert Murdoch has the ear of countless politicians in both the US and the UK. It's been so public, the influence he had on Trump, but he's meeting, even now, he's meeting with senators and congressmen, and they go to him for advice in terms of what will work. What is it that is our best message going forward? And so he's lost some of his power. You know, Roger Ailes was a real kingmaker, and Roger Ailes, obviously, for your listeners, you know, ran Fox News for many, many years before he died. But Rupert is unquestionably still someone that politicians call for advice, and he readily dispenses that advice. So he's very much still influential in both the UK and the US. I mean, he threw all of his power behind Brexit and was absolutely influential in that being a successful movement.
So given the toxicity of News Corp, I mean, you know, denying the election results in 2020, denial of climate change, steering racism, stuff that Tucker Carlson would do every other week, bigotry, polarization, using media as a political tool to advance business interests. How do you explain, let's call it, the complicity of hundreds of quality journalists that work in his empire? Would you go back to work for Murdoch at this point in your life if you got a good offer?
It's not really an option for me, I think, at this point. But you do see people leaving Fox. You see Shep Smith, Chris Wallace. I mean, these are very high-profile examples. You know, behind the scenes, not behind the scenes, but sort of under the radar, there are journalists who left the Wall Street Journal in droves. But there are people still there, to answer your question directly, who say, if I can do good work, that's all that matters. And if I can do investigations, then, you know, it doesn't matter who's paying me. Journalism is a very wonderful calling and a great job, but there aren't as many jobs in journalism as there used to be. And Rupert Murdoch loves journalists, and he invests in his you know, his own reporters. And so the easiest answer is just that some people can't get out.
You know, Wall Street Journal does an amazing job and good investigative pieces. You know, the some of the best investigative pieces about big tech and about the complicity of regulators vis-a-vis big tech came out of the Wall Street Journal in the last few years. But journalists, smart journalists, do acknowledge that they have total freedom in the Wall Street Journal because Rupert Murdoch needs in his portfolio a quality, lucrative outlet like the Wall Street Journal, because this will give him more power that he will use in other means, dark arts, to do stuff that journalists are probably would vehemently oppose.
Yes, Rupert would not have the ear of the kinds of politicians that he does if he only owned the New York Post and the Sun in London. He needs quality operations in order for all of his levers to sort of work. And so you're absolutely right that you have incredible reporting being done at Murdoch's quality publications. And in a way, that serves its purpose for him as well.
Yeah. Another way to ask it, I know I'm repeating myself in a way, is why is Fox, New York Post, Sun, Sunday Times, Wall Street Journal are still very legitimate news outlets if the elites in the countries know that they are controlled by the family that clearly has total disregard for basic ethics of journalism?
I mean, I think it's because people are pretty blinded, and they say, as long as I can do what I'm doing and I feel good about that work and I don't worry about what my role is in, you know, who I am to Rupert Murdoch, you just keep doing your stuff. And as you pointed out, there's incredible reporting in the Wall Street Journal and the Times of London. Right after Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal, there was a big exodus of reporters and people who felt like they couldn't do the work that they wanted to do. But again, people just don't look right, don't look left. They say, if I can do what I'm doing right in front of me, they continue to do it and they feel okay about it.
Your colleague, Kara Swisher, that always used to work at the Wall Street Journal in the past, calls Murdoch Uncle Satan. Do you have a nickname for him?
No, I do not.
If you had to come up with a nickname for him, how would you call it?
You're not going to get me to do that.
Okay.
I'm very happy just calling him Rupert Murdoch. I mean, there have been so many nicknames for him
90
over
years.
The years in the British press, but yeah.
By the way, this is a question for both of you guys. I'm starting thinking, maybe the Wall Street Journal fight against the big tech, that also serves the interests of Murdoch, doesn't it? I mean, you look at it because it's also your agenda. Maybe Sarah doesn't read you weekly, but this guy fights a lot, you know, with Facebook and big tech. And it actually, maybe it looks like fine journalism, but it serves the financial interests of the Murdoch family. Am I wrong? How the Wall Street Journal covers the big tech.
You're right. And I also know, well, the people who do that work, and they are not told to do it by Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
It's an absolutely legitimate story. You know, I work for the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos. I don't get my marching orders from Jeff Bezos, but there are a lot of people who look at the Washington Post as compromised by that ownership. And I think that, so I should be transparent about my own position in the media ecosphere. I think that, you know, the tech coverage at the Wall Street Journal is pristine, and it may serve Rupert Murdoch's interest, and he's very public about attacking the tech companies, particularly vis-a-vis the way they use media. I mean, it's hard to not want that kind of coverage.
Of course.
Yeah, no, definitely the Wall Street Journal coverage of big tech was dramatically better than the Times or any other news outlets. And I'm sure that none of the journalists there get any kind
it's
of
a coincidence.
Marching. But it's aligned with Rupert Murdoch, and the editor-in-chief already knows that maybe it's more prominent on the first page of the newspaper or in the op-ed pages. Now, talking about big tech and the social networks in particular, do you think that Facebook and Twitter, that were that 10 years ago we thought that they are going to take some market share from and diminish some of the power of media moguls like Rupert Murdoch, actually maybe catapulted the power of Fox News, made the most controversial talking points that you hear in the evening from Tucker Carlson only more viral today.
Absolutely. I mean, you'll remember that Rupert Murdoch bought MySpace and wanted MySpace to be the next Facebook. So he wanted that kind of direct influence. But a good runner-up is to be able to utilize the successful social media network in Facebook to amplify your messages and your views. And there's no question that many more people consume Tucker Carlson in the world through clips that are circulated on social media than actually watch his show on a given weeknight on Fox News.
Just for our listeners that don't watch Fox, I think most of the listeners of this podcast don't watch
Errol Segal doesn't listen to your podcast?
I'm not sure. Okay, anyway, sure. Can you briefly explain to people who are not following it, what is it actually that Tucker Carlson do every night on Fox?
For your listeners, Fox News is a 24-hour cable news operation that was created to rival CNN and be a counterweight to what Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch saw as the liberal news media. And at night, Fox has always platformed a variety of different opinion hosts. Tucker Carlson is one who has become the most watched and the most powerful. And what Tucker Carlson does is brilliant from the perspective of what he's trying to achieve, which is that he selects stories and chooses, he sort of unearths stories that other people in media are not paying attention to that highlight a certain worldview, that he's able to promote that the United States is being taken over by immigrants at the behest of the Democratic Party in order to manipulate the political system and advance the interests of the Democratic Party. He promotes great replacement theory, which is an idea that white people are being replaced by brown and black people and immigrants that are not somebody that you want in the country. And that's the biggest message that he promotes day in and day out on his show. He has a few other big theories that he likes to promote, but he is largely, that's his big one these days. And it's also a general mistrust of the government and that the elites are screwing you. And he has become as powerful as any host that we have seen. And he is someone that, when you talk about politicians and wanting to court people in the media, Republican politicians look to Tucker for their messaging.
Yeah, and you spoke before about how the reality today in the United States is kind of broken. I don't know if that's the word, but it's not everything is perfect. And
you mean reality?
The political reality.
Like the sense of what's true.
Yeah. And, there's a saying, American saying, every billionaire is a policy failure. You probably know that. So I was wondering, after
yes.
watching your show, in your opinion, is a billionaire media tycoon worse? I mean, is it a failure that risks the democratic system itself?
There's no question that a media billionaire has a level of influence, an immediate level of influence that a billionaire in finance or a billionaire in some other field doesn't have, because that person in media is controlling our sense of the truth or our sense of right and wrong. So if you are looking for that kind of multi-level influence, it's better to be a rich media person than it is to be someone who made your fortune in toilet paper or toothpaste or something like that.
Yeah. So this would this is a segue to the last question. Is Elon Musk the next Rupert Murdoch? Or maybe even more powerful because his net worth is north of $150 billion.
I mean, this is where you have to give Rupert credit, because
I'm not good at predictions, but sitting where I sit and seeing what Elon has already done at Twitter, you know, he's stepping down as CEO. Of course, that doesn't mean that he's not going to have influence. But Rupert's really good at this. I don't think Elon really has it.
And Elon is about to fail. Yeah. Tomer wanted to ask you last questions about another TV show.
Have you seen Succession? In Hebrew, it's Hayorshim. It's very popular, actually, in Israel. Most people know Hayorshim, the TV series, and not Rupert Murdoch itself. I wondered, how do you see, do you watch the show?
I've consumed every minute of Succession.
And what do you think of it?
And love it. It's incredibly satisfying to watch. And, you know, that has done more than anything. It takes a fictional show for most people to understand the kind of influence that a person like Rupert Murdoch has. But I love Succession, and my favorite part of it is the insults.
The days of the, and I must say, it's kind of comforting to see that, you know, with all their money and power, they're still this family that hates each other.
Broken
and,
family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they suffer, I guess, more than most of us.
The thing that has always been captivating about Rupert as a subject is that he does have this relationship with his children and this very fatherly desire for his family to be a family business. And his children want his approval, but he tortures them, but he supports them. I mean, so as someone who does find family dynamics fascinating, you know, Rupert is both an incredibly potent political force, but also a complete psychodrama in terms of the way he operates inside his family.
So now for the really last question, Israeli related. I'm not sure that you are aware that Bibi Netanyahu, who is our next prime minister and has been our prime minister for the past 500 years or so, Bibi Netanyahu's dream is to get Rupert to come to Israel and control one of the main news channels.
He wrote him a letter, right?
He wrote him a letter. Really, yeah. Wow, and it failed. Yeah. Rupert decided that he doesn't want to come to Israel. Had Rupert came to Israel, what should have we expected to happen here? What do you think happens to a country that you have Rupert Murdoch all of a sudden a major player in the news media?
I mean, you guys seem to be doing okay on your own without Rupert Murdoch descending into all
thank
kinds
you, thank
of...
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take it as a compliment.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
But I think that you would find it to be entirely destabilizing, because the beauty of what Rupert does is he takes things that exist in the nether regions of gossip and social media, and he absolutely draws them to the top of society. So that's what you could expect.
All right. Sarah Ellison, thank you very much for joining us today. It was fantastic, very insightful.
We appreciate it.
And we hope that you will continue to cover Rupert Murdoch, and we won't have to do it here in Israel, but you know, you can never know.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
אוקיי, עד כאן המרקרים להשבוע. בטרם ניפרד ונודה לכולם, תומר, מילה אחת סיכום עם הרעיון עם סרה אליסון, מה למדת?
וואו, קצת, אני מרגיש, איך הוא הופלס בעברית?
חסר תקווה.
לא, מציאות שבורה, אני בטוח שאפשר לתקן אותה. עיתונות עצמית שהזכרת מקודם זה לגמרי אחד הפתרונות. ועוד מילה אחת, לחזור לפתיח, זוכר שדיברתי על קוקה קולה וקשת, אנשים צריכים לדעת ש... אתה יודע מה משותף עוד למרדוק ולטראמפ?
משותפים להם הרבה דברים.
נכון, הם שניהם חולים על דיאט קולה, שותים איזה 10 ביום. ידעת את זה? מטורף.
כן. בלי סיגרים אצלם שם, זה רק בלי סיגרים ושמפניות. אוקיי. אוקיי, תומר אביטל, תודה רבה שהצטרפת אליי היום, היה כיף.
תודה, תודה שהזמנת.
שיהיה בהצלחה מאוד לך ולרעייתך. אנחנו מחזיקים אצבעות. תודה רבה לשרה אליסון על הרעיון הנהדר שהיא נתנה לנו מניו יורק הבוקר. תודה רבה לאמיר פקטור המפיק ולדן ברומר העורך האגדי. אל תשכחו להירשם בחנויות הפודקאסטים של אפל, ספוטיפיי וגוגל. להתראות בשבוע הבא.